when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Yeah.
Hope everybody's paying attention today because I have a special guest on the show, and his name is R.L. Poole. I think this conversation is going to be very, very interesting. He's had a few experiences with some alien encounters, and he's been abducted several times since he was 6 years old. So I want to welcome R.L. Poole to the Unimpressed Podcast. How you doing today, R.L.?
Thanks, John. Thank you for having me here. This conversation's been a long time coming.
Me and R.L. have been talking a lot. He was the only human being that understood my narrative, and I don't know what to say about that, but I feel good about that considering RL is a lifetime member of Mensa, and I think his IQ is unscorable. They scored him at 160, and I think it stopped there. Did you know this IQ thing, that you had this type of intellect at a young age?
I did. I remember being very young, and I remember being 3 years old and standing on my dad's lap while he held up the Wall Street Journal, and he called my mom in and said, come in here, you've got to see this. And he was teaching me how to read at three, and I was reading the Wall Street Journal. He said, read this paragraph, and I read the entire paragraph, and I was three. Now, I didn't understand a word of what I was reading, okay? But I could very easily adapt and learn, and I've always scored in the top one percentile. When the Iowa tests back in the day in school, when they had those, I scored in the 99th percentile when I was like 6 years old.
Did you look like an academia type of person or in school?
No. Later on, I experienced some extreme family problems and things like that. And so I kind of turned into the class clown. I was bored. They put me in the gifted and talented classes, and I felt very unassigned in my life, if that makes sense, that I had these gifts, but I really had no direction or any purpose of what I wanted to do with them. So it was almost more of a plaything.
Do you think that most people with high IQs have high sensibilities?
I don't think that you can have one without the other. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the gifts, if you want to call it that I've been given is perception. And to have high perception, you have to have a high degree of sensitivity. I'm a high functioning autistic person. We have extreme sensitivities in some areas, and it is it's kind of a mixed bag. Some of these things are helpful and some of them are prohibitive. And so you have to kind of weave between the lines with some of these things. But yes, I think that there's a certain sensitivity that comes along with heightened perception. Like, for instance, heightened senses. I have very heightened sense of hearing, of smell. I have very, even though I have glasses now, I had 20/15 vision when I was a younger man. I had extremely acute senses. And I think that this fed the perception that then fed the intellect. And I think it's kind of a chain of things that go along with it.
So when you get a brain impression about autism, because of modern society, do you really think it's autism?
Do I think what is autism?
When someone gets labeled autistic in their life, I mean, I think there's somewhat of a brain impression that comes along with that. So you're going through life and you're labeled as an autistic person. But in reality, if you have 160 IQ, is it really autism? You understand what
I'm
saying?
Yes, I do. And it's not just based on a person's IQ. I was discovered, diagnosed very late in life. I was in my early 30s when it was discovered I was autistic. I'd actually went because I was an extreme insomniac. I still am. And I didn't understand that. And I had a family, and I had strange behaviors that other people didn't have, or likes or dislikes, things like that. And it finally came back that oh, I'm not crazy. I'm autistic. It comes with a certain set of traits, a certain set of behaviors that are very indicative of autistic people. And I fit that mold in an almost textbook way. I don't feel like it is boxing me in. I felt like I finally understand myself. Because I'm not alone. There are lots of other people who are out here like me, maybe more or less abilities, but that same set of traits of autism, especially in high functioning autism that appear with this higher capability, there are also these other traits that come along with it. And that is what defines autism. It's not simply my abilities. Now, I do understand what you're saying from a certain perspective, that you say after a certain level, is it even autism or is it just simply not being able to be understood by people who
I talk about my high sensitivities, and I think that's why me and RL could communicate on the same level. And it's just when you're going down this road, I know I have autism now, and it seems like they put different types of people, you know, I'll say club or whatever you want to call it, but like, you know, where is there a pure source, you know, that says, hey, this is really autism? Because I think there's other pieces and other, you know, human beings that they may put in that category that could be completely opposite of your experience and who you are, you know, because if you have this high intelligence, instead of us trying to label it with something that may be construed in a negative light, maybe it should be called something else. Maybe there's something to dive into, you know, with the intelligence that comes along that creates these characteristics that is autism.
You're doing the chicken or the egg. Is it the intelligence that causes the traits or the traits that causes the intelligence? And I think that that's an interesting perspective to have. For me, I believe that it is autism. My mother was a drinker who drank while she was pregnant with me. She was an alcoholic and she didn't know initially that she was pregnant and was quite a drinker. And this has been known since even, you know, when I was born, that this type of thing does cause autism or can cause autism. And in my case, where people in these same situations were born as maybe lower functioning autistic people, that one in 10, 20, 50 million chance that the coin flipped the other way and I was born a high functioning autistic person. But it's the same cause. It just happened to be an anomalous result.
People talk about this 3D and this 5D timeline. And right now they're saying that the 3D and 5D timeline are splitting. So when I see, it's almost like where I'm at, visually, when I see, it seems like I see the world in a bubble, in a way, and I see these decisions being made by people that I know are wrong. If they're sticking this autistic, you know, autism label in the 3D world, but someone, and they say this 3D and 5D timeline are splitting, and if you're on this 5D timeline and you look at the 3D world, you know, what really is it? You know what I'm saying? That's where my little question pops up. What really is it?
I've almost suspected that it's almost higher evolution. It's almost like just one more notch up on the evolutionary ladder of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes through, of course, like every other trait that we've ever been given, a selective mutation, where mine is an accidental selective mutation in that way. But I believe that those things can only happen where they're possible to happen, where you're talking about the 3D and the 5D, that there comes a point where I believe that there is a convergence of these two dimensional areas. And a person like myself has to kind of walk with a foot in each world and try to make sense of it.
Because when you have the high sensibilities, you're feeling things that nobody else, I mean, that a small percentage of the population may feel. And the other thing that I realized too is, like, if you are affected by something, it's probably times 20 compared to some other person that may be affected by the same thing. They don't have the same intense sensitivity response. I guess that's what I can call it, if that makes sense. But
no, it's a good term.
Yeah. You ever thought about that? You know what I'm saying? Like, people don't realize that, hey, I got high sensitivities. If I have something that it hits me that's emotional, it's harder me to control that feeling and that emotion compared to someone else that may not have these high sensibilities. Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to
explain that? It's easier to kind of keep it even. Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've had a lot of extreme highs and extreme lows. And again, this is part of that experience when you have extremely high sensitivity to things. And for me, it's sound, light, and smells. Like those things are all very, very, very prevalent to me. And it's almost like I love comic books. And of course, Superman had all of these extreme senses, but to a much more height level. And he had to literally teach himself to block things out so that they didn't overwhelm him. And that is often how I feel with things, is that I must, I like to stay alone. I like to be in a dim environment. I like things to be very quiet most of the time. And this allows me to not be distracted by those things and allow my mind to penetrate other things. It's like having the volume turned up to like 14 on whatever particular senses are the ones that are most sensitive for you. Other people are different. For me, it's those three big things. I have to have things dim, quiet, and smell nice. And if those things are all in play, then I'm a happy lad and I can read and research and study and all those things. But I get jarred a little bit by some of those things sometimes. So it's almost like, so if you compared my intellect to like a superpower in the comic books, those would be my weaknesses.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Superman. So when you think about high IQ, you think about high sensitivities. Do you think that you're like this because you might be very, very close to source? Might be create. You know, when I say source, you might be very, very close to creation than someone else.
I don't know how to gauge that. I appreciate that theory, and I know that we've had a couple discussions about this, that you felt like because of my abilities that I might be close to source. I feel like that could be true, but I don't understand what that is. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm smart enough to admit when I don't know something. And I think that you're suggesting something that there is evidence for, but I can't give you the explanation. I can tell you that I've been able to discover things nobody's discovered, see things that other people have looked at and didn't see, that I've had experiences with beings that other people haven't had experiences with. So I do seem to have this knack for getting information that other people don't have. But why? I don't know. Maybe it's just the ability of receptivity.
Here's an example for you. A small pure blood dog, like a pug. I had a pug for 13 years and, you know, they have more allergies and more issues than a human being.
Yeah.
You know, and
they're
and
cute as a butt, but boy, are they're a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you think about a pure-blooded pug, and I talk about source, that you may be close to source, it's kind of has a parallel of sensitivities. When you think of a pure blood dog has these very high allergies and all this stuff going on, and you look at you, I mean, I should maybe use something different, but that's what I could think of. But think about that, you know, pure blood dog, pure blood human, closer to source. I don't know, just a thought process. I don't know if there's an answer out there for that, but it's just, I'm just trying to lead up to some rationale.
Now I'm smiling because I feel like you touched on something that I was going to get to much later.
Yeah.
But it's how we are viewed by those guys, the little gray guys. They view us a lot like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very interesting that you just came up with that analogy on your own. That's very clever, because when I tell you what I have to say, it's going to very much validate that belief and that statement. Breeds of human.
Talked about the Superman thing. You know, when I started experiencing this enlightenment and these feelings that I have, and then you look at some of these comic books, think about Antarctica, the white hair, all ice, you know, this foundation of idea had to come from somewhere. It's a very, the look of it looks very, very questionable look. Where did that information come from?
Right. The Kryptonian thing, and kind of like the Nordic, what they call the Nordic alien type of thing.
The Norse. Yeah.
Like the Nordic aliens, you know, because Superman is an alien from Krypton, and they're all blonde. Look at Supergirl, you know, tall, blonde, beautiful, just like how they describe the Nordic type aliens who look like us. They say they walk right down the street and the only thing you'll notice about them is how beautiful they are. That they won't look much different than how we look. The ones that I've experienced look much different than us, and they are the what are typically referred to as the small gray people. Those are the ones I've had my experiences with.
Tell me when these abductions first started, and what was that first experience like?
My very first experience that I remember, and I believe it was the first experience, was in the winter of about 1978 to 1979. I was about 6 years old, and I had gone to sleep one night in my very cool Spider-Man pajamas that I loved, and they were getting a bit snug on me. And I remember my mother telling me that night, "This is probably the last time you're going to get to wear these because they're so small on you. We'll get you some new ones." And I said, "Okay." So I went to bed, and I woke up outside of my house, standing in the backyard, and I'm looking up at the sky, and I have no idea why I'm doing that. And I'm standing there, and I don't have my pajamas on. I'm just standing in my underwear in the snow, ankle deep in the snow in the backyard, bare feet, no pajamas, just staring at the sky. I just remember when I came to myself, the color blue. I just remember seeing the color blue because I was looking at the sky, and I didn't know why I was doing that, why I was there, how I got there. And I remember looking down, and I looked down, and I could see that I wasn't cold at all. And it was wintertime. There was 6 inches of snow. I wasn't cold in the least. And I looked down at my feet, and I was standing in the snow, but there were these big puddles around my feet where I had been standing there. There were no footprints anywhere. And there was left by my foot this little UFO toy that I used to love to play with. It was white, and it would roll across the floor like it was levitating. It had a little clear capsule. You could put a little fella in there and move him around. And this was right by my left foot, like it was placed there. I felt as though I had been placed there like a little toy soldier or something. And I'm just standing there, and I don't know what to do or where to go. And all of a sudden, the back door comes open, and my mother and father, who apparently had been looking for me and couldn't find me, come tearing out the back door toward me. And I still am just frozen in place. And I don't know if it was shock or autism, you know, like I just didn't know what to do. I just stood there, and they came tearing across the yard through the snow, grabbed me, got me inside. They started the process of warming. My mother got me a blanket. She's making me hot chocolate. And I'm sitting there in the kitchen, and I'm sweating under this blanket. I don't want the blanket, but I didn't want to upset her or anything. And while she's in there making me hot chocolate, I hear them talking about what happened. And my mother said to my dad, she said, "He's a sleepwalker. That's what it is." And my dad said, "Well, I don't think he's sleepwalking." And she said, "Well, what makes you say that?" And he said, "Well, I had to unlock two locks on the back door to open it up to go outside and get him." He said, "Even the storm door was locked." And she said, "Oh yeah, you're right. You know, that's right." And so they both kind of looked at each other for a moment and didn't say anything. And then they both looked at me, and then they looked up, and then they looked at each other, and they never spoke of it again. And my dad had noticed the same thing that I had when they opened the door. Was he said, "I had to unlock both these doors to get out, and there were no footprints in the snow in any direction." And that was the point at which they were like, what the hell is going on here? And they never spoke of it again. The only thing that happened later was my dad sat me down out of the blue. He wasn't like this. He sat me down out of the blue and had me watch Chariots of the Gods, the very famous Eric Von Daniken documentary on UFOs, which came out around that time. I want to say 1977 or so. And he sat me down and had me watch this, just me and him. And he never said a word during it. And I don't know if he was like waiting for me to like recognize something or key in on something. I don't know, or if he was just trying to help me understand what had happened. But that was my very first experience. And my pajamas were gone, never recovered. There were no footprints in the yard. They had to unlock the door to get out there. And I'm just a little kid standing in his underwear in the snow in the backyard in the very break of dawn, staring up at the sky for what appears to be no reason. I feel pretty safe in assuming that I was abducted that night.
That's pretty wild. I mean, now, mom and dad, did you ever, what was the lineage of your mother and father? What was the bloodline and history of the family?
Well, so this is another part of the abduction experience that I learned about later, is the small gray people are extremely interested in firstborn genetics. I am the firstborn of two firstborns. My mother was a firstborn. My father was a firstborn. I'm the firstborn of two firstborns. And they seem very interested in firstborn genetics. Not that others aren't considered or even taken. I'm sure that there are people who aren't firstborn who are abducted and things like that. But their preference seems to be to focus on people who are firstborn. Even our own science says that firstborn genetics tend, not always, tend to be the best. And I can tell you that I have two siblings, and they, neither one of them have my particular kind of abilities or anything. That seems to be what they're interested in. They're also interested in people who have blue or green eyes. They seem very interested in that. They have blue and green eyes, and they are interested in that. And I could tell you all about that and why and everything, but that is my, that was my very first experience with them. And this is clearly a mission, a scientific mission on their part to collect DNA. And I know why they're doing that. They told me that as well. And it's pretty mind-blowing when they told me. I was stunned.
What did they tell you?
Well, what they said was that they are, okay, so I asked them why they take me, why they take people. And if you're going to take people, why are you taking me? And I think it's a very valid question to ask. And I'm sure it's one that's been asked a lot by people who experiencing this phenomenon, this reality. And the answer kind of sat me back, because this being said, what do you do when evolution stops being your friend? I don't understand. He said, what do you do when evolution stops being your friend? And I was like, what do you mean? Evolution is your friend. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, not always. And in their particular case, they are such an ancient species and have evolved over so many millions of years that they are actually beginning to evolve to the point of extinction. What's going on is that their brains, which we all know they have much larger heads than bodies, and that they have this amazing intellect, and they have these telepathic abilities. Well, this comes at an expense, and it comes at the expense of their body. As their brains get bigger, their bodies get smaller and weaker, and they're actually being born now. The females are too small to carry their young to term. They carry their young just like humans do. The males are being born either sterile or without genitalia at all. So they are suffering an evolutionary extinction, which just blows my mind that that's even a thing, that that's a concept. And so what they decided to do tens of thousands of years ago was to try to head this off at the pass. And so they saw this happening. And so what they decided to do was they're going to devolve their species. Their goal is, their mission is, they found a hominid on Earth, primitive man, and they tweaked us. They just tweaked our DNA. They're like, we need to combine with something that is less advanced than us, that has all the advantages that we currently lack, but still keep the advantages we have. So what they want is they want to put their amazing minds inside of bigger, tougher, stronger bodies. And so what they've done is they've tweaked humanity at the genetic level tens of thousands of years ago. And what they do is they selectively choose the ones that are the best, like picking out the best bell peppers at the supermarket. And what they do is they extract their genetic material and they combine it with theirs, or they clone it for their own purposes. And by doing so, by mixing us with them, they create what will be their new species and will carry on the line and will have millions more years of evolution ahead of them without having to run into these same issues.
Well, when you talk about, you said blue, the blue eyes and the green eyes. I have Native American on both sides of my family.
I can tell.
And I talk about, you know, I talk about this energy. I have energy coming out of my right hand very heavily, you know, and then when I get around certain people, the energy can pick up to see certain people I'm around. And I think there was two people I've been around, and they were pale skin, two females, pale skin. One had blonde hair. One had actually black hair. And the one girl that had black hair was on, she was actually on American Idol. And when I met her, it was very interesting, because it was like she was sitting way across the table, and it was like I could hold up my hand, and the energy that was attracted to her was so strong. She literally told me to stop. Right? She literally told me to stop. It was almost swirling around her.
And the other
girl, the other girl, the same thing, could feel it. Now I have brown eyes. What do you think that means?
Oh, now I'm not saying that people with darker skin or brown eyes or different hair or different cultures. This has happened across eons of time over every culture. You look at the
Gotcha.
Dogons, you look at the Native Americans, you look at the Irish, you look at American, you look at all over the world, all disparate types of people have all experienced this same reality. I believe that each, and this is what I was talking about, excuse me, this is what I was talking about when I said that they see us as different breeds of human, and different breeds of human have different jobs or different talents or different skills that they wish to harness for their benefit. For instance, one of the last abduction experiences that I had that I remember on board one of their craft, I'm standing on this little pedestal in the middle of what feels like a giant empty black room, but I can't tell. I can't see anything. And one of these little guys comes in way at the end and he stands on one of these pedestals and it lifts up and it moves him toward me. And he's coming straight toward me and I'm standing there in this cone of gold light. And I don't mean yellow, I mean gold. It was literally the color of gold. And it had all of these little gold sparkles in the air all around me in this little cone that was over me. And he had one over him as well. And he comes very, very close, literally 2 feet from me. And we're just standing there and staring at each other. And even while he's standing on the pedestal, I am towering over this little being. He's looking at me and I'm looking at him. And we looked at each other for what felt like an eternity, but was probably about 2 minutes. And I have no idea what that was. But all of a sudden, he lifts his arm and he touches me, and he touches me right here on the chest, right over my heart. And he says one word inside my head, doesn't open his mouth, he doesn't talk. It just booms inside my head, this one word, guardian. That's what I heard inside my head. And when I heard that, my brain exploded with information. It was this, I've heard people say download, and I think that really is the most appropriate term. It's like you get this giant packet of information, and then you have to open it up and kind of process the contents at your slow human level. And what I came to understand through this interaction was I was being deemed as the guardian line of human beings, that what they determined is my best asset to them is as a guardian, bodyguard, that they have security. If you go and listen to Travis Walton, which we discussed before, he actually tells a story where he met one of the human beings that actually work for them, that obviously was raised, trained by them, and works for them as security. And that's what they deemed me as, a guardian, like a guard dog, like how we were talking about dog breeds earlier. Like you have a pug, you have the working group, you have the toy group. And I'm part of the guardian group. They said that my line makes amazing bodyguards, that you want to get past this door, you're not making it alive. I just have traits that they extremely favor for certain jobs, and one of those jobs is that of a guardian or bodyguard.
So when you start experiencing this after this first time with your mom and dad, I mean, when I talked to you about traveling, you were very frightened about that because of some of the experiences that you had. Can you tell me a little bit about why you would be frightened to travel?
I can. In particular, thing that I have been the most fearful about is flying, because I have been abducted so many times. I have had so many sightings. If you look at my channel, The Haunted Sky, you'll see dozens and dozens and dozens of really good, clear photographs of these things because they seem to always be around me. My whole life, it's like I've been haunted by them, which is why I called my book Beneath the Haunted Sky. There's been two different occasions where I've actually had something try to abduct me from the highway. And they were unsuccessful attempts both times, but they were attempts. Now, I can't imagine after two separate attempted abductions on the ground, what could happen to me while I'm helpless tube 35,000 feet. That thought just kind of makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. But one of these instances was I was driving home. I was in a band and it was just a fun thing. We weren't trying to be famous or anything. We were just guys getting around having fun. And I had actually gotten into an argument with my wife at the time earlier that day about my continued insistence about these abductions that were happening to me that she was denying, which was very hurtful for me because I'm not prone to making things up. I'm pretty direct about things and very upfront. And so it upset me very much. So I left the house. I went to go blow off some steam with the guys. And on my way back, you know, and one of the things she said to me was, you think everything's a UFO, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I don't think everything's a UFO. It's just once you notice it, like you start looking all the time now. Now you start paying attention. You ever notice how many green cars there are after you buy a green car? It's like you never notice how many UFOs there are in the sky until you see one or are abducted by one. Same thing. It creates this a state of hypervigilance. Okay. Now, when you combine hypervigilance with hyperperception, which I already have, well, now you look paranoid when really it's just reality on a finer scale sometimes. But I'm driving home and I'm driving down Interstate 70, heading back to the house, and it's getting to be nighttime, summertime. So it's about 9 p.m. So it's starting to get dark, but it's not. And I'm driving and I see a light off in the distance, and it's one of those glowy, slow moving lights that just instantly filled me with dread upon seeing it. A triggered response, an involuntary dread, the sight of that light. And I keep driving and I tell myself, you know what, maybe she's right. Maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe, you know, and I really let her almost gaslight me into denying my own experiences. But as I'm driving, I notice that this light is on an intersecting path with my truck, that if I keep going my speed and this keeps going at its constant speed, we're going to meet. And this, it was just a light, like a big round ball of light, looked about 40 or 50 feet wide, settles over the highway, and I drive under the light. As I drive under the light and I can see the light of the craft on my shirt, it blinks out like somebody turned off a light switch and disappears. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what that was, but fine. So I keep driving. And as I'm driving, all of a sudden, I start turning the wheel. I start turning the wheel to the right. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm not doing that. I don't want to do that. And then it did it again. I could feel something overpower my motor cortex and made me physically turn the wheel. And I had to fight to get control back. It did it three times. Three times it did this. And finally, I realized that something was in there kind of trying to take over. And I had to, I don't know how to explain it. I freaked out and I just, whatever that was, I just blew it out of my mind and made it leave. And I felt it like, it's the strangest feeling. I felt it let go of me, like, okay, and let me go. And I drove home. And when I got home, I was even more angry at my wife than when I left, because she, her gaslighting almost made me lower my guard enough that that would have worked, that I was almost caught off guard by that. The second time was I was in the woods. I like to practice woodland survival skills, self-reliance things. And I've done it my whole life. I've made a pursuit out of learning every survival skill I possibly could. It's just fun. And it's fun to do. And I really like to get out in the woods to be alone, because it's generally very nice out in the woods. It's generally quiet and it's calm and it's peaceful. And it really helps to bring me down when I feel overstimulated. The woods are peace for me. So I'm out there and I make it to my little spot that I go to. And I'm not out there very long, maybe 20 minutes. I've arrived at my destination. It was about, I parked my truck. I walked, I don't know, mile and a half, mile and three quarters to my little spot that I liked in the woods. And I'm sitting there and I'm fishing through my pack and I'm looking for, I'm going to make some coffee, maybe a little thing of ramen, you know. When all of a sudden I'm sitting there, it becomes extremely quiet. Now, if you spend any time in the woods, it's quiet sometimes, but not silent. There's always a little chitter of something over there. There's a bird over there. There's leaves rustling. You know, there's that ambient sound that always seems to accompany the woods that was cut off. And it's dead silent. And I look out in the woods to see, well, is there something big stomping around, scaring everybody away? What is it? Everything had this yellowish cast to it in the woods. The leaves, the trees, the ground, the sky, the light, everything looked yellow. And I thought that was very odd. And then there was something in my head that just kept saying, you got to go. You got to go right now. You have to go right this minute. Go now. And I've never felt that way in the woods. I've never been afraid ever for one second.
Mm-hmm.
This day, I felt like I have to run out of these woods. So I grab my pack. I throw stuff in it. I throw it over my shoulder. And I'm not a small guy. So moving that mile and a half, 2 miles, carrying a 50-pound pack at my size, moving that fast, like I mean it. And so I get to the truck. Nothing happened. I'm like, okay, I don't know what that was, but we're gonna call it a day. We're going to come out again some other time. Throw the pack in the truck. I get in the truck. I drive off. And I'm like, okay. All right. I don't know what that was, but so I'm driving down 235 from Xenia to Fairborn. And as I'm driving, it's a 2-lane kind of country highway. And all of a sudden, there's these bright red, white, and blue lights behind me. I don't hear a siren or anything, but I see the lights in my mirror. And I'm like, oh, come on. Who am I bothering today? You know, like I couldn't have been speeding. And if I was, where were you? And also, why are you trying to pull me over here? Because I went to pull over. I didn't even look behind me. I just saw the red and blue lights. And I went to pull over and I was like, there's no median over here. There's no berm. There's no median in the center.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Where do you expect me? And I was like, who is the expletive deleted? Who's trying to pull me over? And I look in the rearview mirror. Oh my gosh. And I'll show you what I saw. I drew a picture of it. This was following me down Route 235. This craft. It's an aluminum colored kind of football shaped ship that had red, white, and blue, these giant square lights in it that were going around it like a strobe light. And it was like 2 feet off the road. I could see the shadow of the craft underneath it because I could see, oh, it doesn't have any wheels. It's just floating above the ground directly behind my truck, following me down the highway. And I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So I just decided, hey, you know what? You do what everybody else does in this situation. You gun it. You floor it, right? Because I'm going to outrun this spacecraft behind me in a Chevy Avalanche, right? You don't know what to do. So what I thought was, I can't outrun you, but I know where I am. I'm going to use the geography to my advantage. The one thing I know these guys don't want are witnesses. They don't want a bunch of people seeing whatever they're going to do. So I knew that I was very close to town and very close to traffic and therefore people. So home wasn't my goal. People became my goal. And so what I did was I just floored it as fast as I could. And I even like went over the hill airborne, full panic mode, and boom. Boom, boom. And as I hit on the other side of the hill, well, now there's the highway, there's people, there's cars, there's witnesses. And as that happened, this thing took off and flew away, and they were unsuccessful in their abduction attempt. They kind of tried to trick me because I just, you know, we're trained. You see red and blue lights, you pull over, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I saw behind me. And it almost worked. If it hadn't been for the fact that there was no berm there or anything for me to pull over, I wouldn't have even looked in the rearview mirror because I know what red, blue flashing lights mean. But when I looked behind me, it was that craft that I just showed you. And wow. it took up both lanes of the highway as it was behind me. And I'm being chased down the highway at ground level by one of these craft. So yeah, I'm not big on travel.
Interesting.
Not big on travel. Interesting.
Do you think that, you know, if you didn't run, you could create more of a relationship with these people or this ancient civilization or whatever you want to call it, aliens, whatever you want to call them? Because if they were going to hurt you and you've been being abducted since you were six, don't you think they would have done it by now?
How do you know who's doing it?
Yeah.
Because the interesting thing to me, once I got home and the adrenaline had spilled off and I took a shot, strictly medicinal purposes, it occurred to me, what are the odds of being someplace where you've never been afraid, where you feel most at peace and having this dreaded feeling of something coming after you, then you leave, and as you're going home, something comes after you. I felt as though I'd been warned by someone else to get out of there because mm-hmm. whoever was coming after me doesn't have those great intentions. You gotcha. See, I don't know who's in that craft, and I also don't like their approach. Mm-hmm. Your approach means a lot. And when you're trying to override my motor cortex and make me physically turn the wheel and pull over, I don't like you immediately. You're not going to force me to do anything. Mm-hmm. You're not going to trick me into doing anything if I can help it. And so to me, the way that things begin often tell you the tone of what that relationship would be. And anybody who is trying to pull over somebody alone, I felt like the last antelope being picked off the herd because mm-hmm. there were cars way miles ahead of me and nobody behind me on the one where they tried to like pull me over. I was being singled out because I was alone. That's always a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the antelope is trying to build a better relationship with the lion when it's trying to pick him off of the herd, you know, and that's what I felt like. I felt like it was a predatory practice, which means it probably means it was for predatory purposes. And so I don't have the luxury of being wrong because you're either right and everything is great and wonderful, or you're never seen again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that wasn't at the time that I had a family, I had a wife and a son and a job. And, you know, I didn't want to lose all that over taking a chance that I hope this is a good being who's trying to do this.
Well, it's funny you say that because I've only talked to one other person and it seems like a lot of people that have this going on or something's going on, they come from either a poor community, they had some issues, some trauma as a kid. And I talked to this guy, Tony Toppins, and he's one person I talked to. He's in Yorkshire, England, and he was molested when he was a kid and had this terrible childhood. But he told me he thought there was some type of controversy between different ancient civilizations.
Yes.
So I don't know if there's any truth to that, but based there on is. His experience, that's what he felt.
Yes, there is. You see, and this is, and I'm glad that you brought that up, and I'm glad that he said that, because that tells you that that person is on the level with you, because that information most certainly tracks. Because of what the Greys have done to us, we are a manipulated species. We have been partially mixed with them. We are considered a chimera. We are considered an abomination, a bastard species by some of the other advanced species that inhabit the universe, the ones that know about us. Some of them don't like us. They consider us abominations because they have purely evolved over the millions of years to be where they are. And we have been tweaked and manipulated. We are GMO, literally genetically modified humans. And this rubs some species the wrong way. Some mm-hmm. don't like us. Some pity us because it's not our fault what we are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there is definitely a presence of hostility on the part of some advanced species that who would just as soon like to get rid of us as look at us, because they disagree with what the gray people are doing to save their species. They disagree with this. They think that they should go gracefully.
When you think about that too, you talk about genetically modified too, is like I go to Curacao and I've been drawn to Curacao the past 3 years, and I've thought about selling my house and buying a place there and being there, but it's a vortex. It's one of the vortex points on Earth. And I feel, for some reason, I feel grounded there. I feel like solid. It's on limestone. It's some of the densest, one of the densest places in the world. There's no hurricanes around this area, but they used to call it the land of the giants. And when that island was discovered, they showed up and there's these huge people. So what do you think the deal is with this chromosome? Because they say that we, you know, when you think about the Egyptians and things like that, they say we were a lot bigger. And then they took this couple of these chromosomes out of the human body and we became a smaller species. Do you have any information about that?
I don't have any specific information about that, but what I can tell you is that there is the difference between being purposely genetically modified and then a species mating with another species. Because then you see, like the fallen angels, you know how they talk about the angels came and had children with the daughters of men, and that these men grew up to be giants, men of renown. You see, it was unregulated genetic experimentation. It was just luck of the draw. And I think if a lot of these things were unregulated, the thing that some of the things that kept them from being large, like in their environment, they would flourish here and become giants accidentally, simply because there are genetic factors that were not tweaked, like how the ones who were inseminated in humans were, that's done in a laboratory. It's the difference between laboratory in vitro and just mating, regular genetics from mating. There is an enormous difference. But what they told me blew me away, because they made us. They made us for a purpose, and the purpose is to save them. We are the means to an end. And people have asked me at times what I felt about being abducted. And, you know, people like yourself are like, have you tried to develop a relationship with them and things like this? It's like, have you ever tried to develop a relationship with your kidnapper? Because let's be honest, what they're doing is criminal. On this planet. It's criminal. You can't kidnap people without their consent. You can't carjack people off the highway. You can't take people and sexually do things to them, or take their DNA or put implants in them. You're not allowed to do that here. So one of the things I was saying about this is that, again, we go back to, how do we establish a motive? How do we go back to establish the ethics of this? And one of the things I go back to comic books. I go back to the things that taught me right from wrong from a very early age. And one of the constants that you see with villains, no matter who they are, no matter what genre, they all have one thing in common. That is, they try to circumvent, subvert, or break natural law. When you look at Voldemort from Harry Potter, what do you want to do? He wanted to cheat death. He wanted to not be part of natural law. And to break natural law, you have to break a whole lot of other laws, don't you? Mm-hmm. Thanos wanted to save the universe by decapitating half of it. This extreme amputation that he wished to perform, which violated natural law. Natural law says things come and things go. Do not interfere.
Mm-hmm. So do you think this source is different than, say, the source of God we think we know today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But we've gotten it confused, haven't we? Because we had people thousands of years ago who were experiencing the same thing, but had no technological verbiage. They had no vocabulary to describe what they were seeing, who they were interacting with, what was happening. They had no scientific context. So when you don't have scientific context, the only other thing that you really have as a human being to explain things is superstition. We didn't say alien then, we said angel, right? We didn't say highest ranking alien, we said God, because to them they were gods. When you are of the most advanced type of species with the most advanced type of technology and you encounter a being that is neither advanced nor technological, you might as well be a god. Mm-hmm. So I think that these people from the past were not lying to us. They were just misinterpreting what was happening. And I think also being impressionable and gullible and believing what they were told. If this being shows up in a craft like this and beams down in front of you and says, I'm God, who's going to argue 2,000 mm-hmm. years ago, 5,000 years ago? Because even if they're not God, they might as well be for what they can do. And so we have these superstitious descriptions that we must now, I believe, view through the lens of our unfortunate science, but still far more advanced than what people had 2,000 years ago. But now we can look at these things and say, a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Oh, that looks just like that picture of that cigar-shaped UFO. I think they were describing, without the benefit or advantage of technology, the best they could of what they were seeing. Mm-hmm. See? And so, and this is where I believe that Eric von Däniken was completely brilliant, because he was the first person to really recognize that these superstitious descriptions actually kind of match a lot of the scientific or more technical descriptions that we give today for the same phenomenon.
That brings up an interesting point for me, you know, because I always said there's two types of thinking. There's a discovery mindset, and then there's a creation mindset. And if you understand creation mindset, you can figure out the answers to things quicker. But if you have a discovery mindset, it's going to take you longer to figure that answer out. So in this instance, if you take creation as one, I think there's been a lot of narratives that have been misinterpreted, like yin and yang, when it should have been feminine and masculine to combined as one. So you're thinking pure source. So I was recently able to tap into this spirit realm, if you will, I guess, and have this communication with whatever it was. It blew me away. I came back from this trip. I didn't know what it was. But when I thought about that and just thought about what you said, so if creation, if there's a source of creation, and then whatever that creation accepts, right, they can accept dark, they can accept light, right? And however, whatever the percentages are and that level of what is accepted, sometimes that energy can morph into some type of thing, right? So if you have creation and you have fractional pieces of energy that come from creation because the discovery mindset didn't make the right choice and you landed in the wrong direction, and it creates this these fractional pieces of energy that become their own thing. Do you think that has been done multiple times in the universe? Because it's just like fear. When I spoke to this entity, and if you realize that fear, you know, comes from source originally, so fear or darkness will never be as powerful as source. And if you hold that mindset, then you can overcome any fear, you can overcome any darkness. Do you know where I'm going with this?
I do. And I think that what you're recognizing in so many words really is that the universe is a binary system in all ways. You see, the yin and yang, it is light and dark. It is male and female. It is rough and smooth. It is it is the symbol of the binary operation of the universe. And your comment about fear, it takes me back again to comic books. I want to tell you about what I learned about fear through a comic book. I'm a big Green Lantern fan as well. And I even have a Green Lantern ring that I wear because I was reading a comic book. I'm about 12 years old. I'm laying on my bedroom floor and I'm going through this book of comic books and I see Green Lantern, Green Arrow. And I'm looking at it and I see Green Lantern standing with his ring, making a shield protecting Green Arrow. And in front of him is Sinestro with his ring, the yellow ring of fear, and they're battling. It's a very powerful image because it was at that moment, 12-year-old boy laying on a bedroom floor reading a comic book, and I realized that fear is the enemy, but will is the strongest power in the universe. And will can conquer fear. But fear is the enemy of will. It is always a binary system. For whatever there is an antagonist, there is a protagonist for, you see. Whatever ills you, will, there's something to cure you. Whatever there is an equal and opposite measure of whatever exists in the universe. You can count on an equal and opposite measure existing somewhere. Even if it is at the quantum level, even if you're talking about the separation of light years, there will be a quantum connection to its equal and opposite power somewhere in the universe.
You know, when you think about resetting that, you know, because I think the fractional, it kind of, because what's weird is this thing I created, finding a perfect audience. I reverse engineered the whole process on how to create a pure source the right way through based on law of attraction. You have a number one book, had a couple number one books, kind of in the physics realm, astronomy realm, and you talk about science and resetting things the right way. And science has been in a land of discovery, which has landed in so many different fractional positions.
That's a good way to say that. Yeah.
You know, fractional positions. When you, if you understood environment, you understood the non-conscious when we're born, and then you understand that the environment in combination with that non-conscious creates your sensibilities. Why does science only use two parts to determine answers when they don't use intuitiveness, they don't use the sensibilities to determine anything? And if you look at the science definition, it says any studies they do is in a controlled environment. Why is it in a controlled environment when law of attraction brings life together?
We do not live in a controlled environment.
But you know what I mean?
But yet science happens anyway, doesn't it? Science happens anyway in a non-controlled environment. You know, I think about this. I think what you're referring to is kind of a selective reasoning that science has at times that makes them blind. Kind of what would be obvious to you and me. Let's talk about magnetism, for example. Scientists feel like they have a pretty good understanding on what magnetism is because they've done a lot of experiments with magnetism, haven't they? They've forgotten something. They forgot that the Earth itself is a great big giant spherical magnet with a north pole, a south pole, a magnetosphere, and generates electricity from a spin like a dynamo. Now, do you think that the best place to understand magnetism is doing magnetic experiments on top of a giant spherical magnet? I liken it to a fish wearing a lab coat underwater with a test tube of water, testing water while it's under the ocean. How can you possibly differentiate it from everything else around you? Some things do not have a controlled environment in which to do them because the universe is not a controlled environment. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of the universe, is that it is wild, it is natural, and it is uncontrolled, you see. And so we feel like we have these understandings. We make these assumptions. Oh, we understand magnetism because we've done all these experiments with it. Yeah, you've done it while standing on top of a magnet. You don't think that that's going to influence your results or your perception or how you carry that information forward into your other science? You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. People say that, well, gravity is it pulls things to the Earth. How do you know when it's an invisible force? How do you know whether it's a push or a pull? It's a guess, you see. But when you confront a physicist with that, their head explodes because they go, well, I guess that's right, isn't it? Yeah, it's right. And so that means that when we reach an impasse, when we reach a dead end in our research, when we say we can't go any farther with this, that, for instance, gravity is a perfect example. We've had gravity for, what, 360 years? What can we do with gravity except fight it? You see, we can't do anything with it. We can't create gravity. We can't control gravity. We can't manipulate gravity. We can't generate gravity. We can't do anything with gravity. After 360 years, I think that it's had its day in its current form. And maybe we need to start reimagining these things differently. Again, and this goes to the creation that you're talking about, of we need to start creating other possibilities for ways that these things can be true in a way that is actually helpful and opens the doors to new and better understanding, which will be expressed by our demonstration of our power over those forces that we hope to control.
That aligns with my thought process of the Newtonian model of reality. Yeah. So when you take these discovery mindset and a creation mindset, and you could land in a discovery mindset, you could land on light or dark. A creation mindset is understanding creation. So if you understood that part of creation, and you said magnetism, right? And they're doing these tests on top of, you know, that's something that's already there. Right. That is a Newtonian model of reality because it's behind the curve.
Exactly.
Yes, you understand perfectly.
And I find that once I explain these concepts to people and how flawed they are, they realize, oh, I never thought of it that way. But that's exactly right. And that actually falls in line with logical thinking, with scientific thinking. When we say that we understand something, well, we have to be able to demonstrate our understanding, don't we? I go back to electricity on this. Electromagnetic is one of the four fundamental forces of physics. Now, we do, at least to some small measurable metric, do understand electricity. And how do I know? Well, because we can demonstrate our understanding of that, can't we? We understand that we can generate electricity, we can manipulate it, we can send it over long distances. We know how to use and generate electricity, the electromagnetic part of the spectrum. We have a tiny foothold on that one fundamental force of physics. And the way that we know that is because we can demonstrate that understanding. You have people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, mainstream, very popular talking heads, who like to espouse their understanding of gravity. He even said on Joe Rogan's podcast, number 1347, you can go look it up. He says, I can land something on Mars. I think I understand gravity pretty well. Well, as you just saw recently, we can't even land something on the moon without it tipping over because we're using the wrong principles. And if you understand gravity, people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, I would simply challenge them to, you understand gravity. Okay, please make some. Please create some gravity. Manipulate gravity. Defy gravity. Generate gravity. You cannot do these things. And the reason you cannot do these things is because you do not understand gravity. And the importance of that is that gravity is only the most fundamental force of physics. It's only what all of physics is based on. And we don't understand it. Stephen Hawking himself said, we do not understand gravity or its principal role. Now, after 360 years of not being able to do anything with gravity, and we've studied it this long and have had no breakthroughs in that way, I think it's time to start looking at it differently. And this is one of the things that I hope to do, is to challenge physics and physicists to start imagining the universe differently so that we get better results, that we actually can command and control some of these forces the way that we already see them being done. Mm-hmm. You see, it's not theoretical anymore. And this is why I am so hard on physics and physicists, because we already see it being done. And the only thing that these physicists can do is deny that these exist. They can deny my experiences, because to accept it would mean to accept that their science is null and void, inadequate, and insufficient.
Well, I mean, that speaks to another thing, is like when you feed off what you see through a discovery mindset, you continue to create more opinions and more controversy. And it's more, you're regurgitating the same thing over and over and over. And you think about Oppenheimer and Einstein and these guys, land what discovery they landed on with the atom, you know, instead of understanding where the atom functions within the universe, they're not that smart. Right. Hence, that's why I met RL, thought his story was interesting. We're going to try to take this thing and have RL tell these stories in a live format. Because I don't think Oppenheimer and Einstein were that smart. And the tour is called Einstein Who. But when you understand creation and you know the route, right, and you understand what the functionality is, you can be out front of that, you know, of that answer before it happens.
It's not that I don't think Einstein was smart. I think Einstein was brilliant. I think that Hawking was brilliant. But again, we go back to, where's the application? You can have the most powerful sniper rifle in the world, right? The most tuned in scope with the most expensive ammunition. And if that is aimed 90 degrees to the target, you're never going to hit the target. I don't care how expensive that rifle was. I don't care how well machined. I don't care how trained the person is who's pulling the trigger. If it's aimed in the wrong direction, never going to hit the target. And I feel it's a shame in a lot of ways that these brilliant people ended up being pointed in a wrong direction simply because they refused or were unable to challenge the field theory that was really put forth by Newton as a placeholder. You know, he says in the Systemata de Mundi, one of his famous science books on the system of worlds, he talks about that these things should become you should come back and revisit all of these assertions with deductive reasoning, because all of his assertions were made inductively. In other words, he used logic to the best of his ability based on the very limited set of available data. But as more data comes along, we are bound, we are duty bound to go back now and to revisit this and use deductive reasoning in order to arrive at a clearer answer to these phenomena.
Well, I'm excited about the potential of the show. I think it's a very intriguing story to hear these things. And so y'all look for that out on the road as we got our first show April 27th with RL in his hometown, Harrisburg, PA. Very, very interesting, very intriguing, and hopefully we can teach people a few things. I mean, if there was a purpose at this point in your life with the abductions and the knowledge and some of the things you want to challenge, what is your goal in the next 2 or 3 years?
What I'd really like to do is open up people's sense of reality, that we live very closed lives. We look down at our phones. We look at screens. We're always looking down. And what we need to do is open ourselves back up again to this discovery, to this way of looking at things differently, and accept the reality that is around us, that we've been literally putting our head in the sand over for far too long, that alien abductions are real. I'm a real person. This really happens to me, and it's happened to millions of people, and it's being done by a species that has yet to be acknowledged at large by the human race. And as a result of that, it exposes the fact that our physics and our science is wrong and inadequate and in need of an audit and an overhaul by people who have not been brainwashed by Newtonian and Einsteinian physics, that there needs to be a base that is recreated, go and start from again to view all of our breakthroughs through a different lens. All of science isn't wrong, but we need to tighten our view on what things really are and why they're really happening, or else we're never going to get any farther than where we are today.
Well, when you talk about things you don't understand, you know, and one thing I don't understand, when you think about Tesla and the energy he discovered, you know, that was a symbiotic energy. It was zero point energy. This is the energy that these ancient civilizations have used to power their crafts without sound, without whatever. And they say that there's enough energy in this cup right here to burn off every ocean on Earth. The energy that Tesla found, I don't know how long it's been, 100 years ago.
Over 100.
And you got billionaires. Here's this weird thing for me to throw out there before we get off here. But you got billionaires like Elon Musk. You got the Amazon guy, Jeff Bezos. You know, you see them and they think they're grandiose if they understood zero point energy and Tesla. And Elon Musk owns the name Tesla. He would understand zero point
energy.
That's
ironic.
Yeah. Why are they still making rockets if they are so brilliant?
And this is my argument, that if we understood rockets, we wouldn't be sitting a man on a firecracker and lighting the fuse and shooting him off into the air. Like, that seems pretty barbaric, doesn't it? I mean, we can't get back to the moon. We can't send people back to the moon. We did it 50 some years ago. Perfectly, first try on live television, and now we can't do it. Even after NASA's received $97 billion for the project, they still can't do it, and they've put it off for another 3 years until 2027. Are we getting dumber over time? It makes me wonder, because we what it is that we have hit the wall of science, and we hit it about 50 years ago, not long after Einstein passed. We hit the wall. We have not been able to progress past relativity because relativity is holding us hostage, I guess, is a way to say it. We're being held hostage by relativity because no one has seemed to be able to effectively challenge it in order to make people try to rethink the model. And that's one of my big goals in life now.
Well, if you listen to this conversation and all these things make sense, it's like, do you not, you know, it's like I question myself all the time. I said, there's got to be multiples of different people out there that have this information and can implement this information. Why don't they? Or do they not understand it?
I believe someone did. His name was Ed Leedskalden, and he built the Coral Castle in Homestead, Florida. And he was able to lift 30 tons of stones out of the ground and set them in place with frightening accuracy. And I believe that the principle he used, based on my own research and discoveries in this area, showed that there is a loophole in physics that he was able to exploit, which allowed him to be able to do what physics says is impossible. And it's because they are missing these little tiny secrets that have to do with magnetism, that have to do with celestial alignments, and that have to do with better and more accurate understanding of what gravity really is.
Well, your family, just touching up and we're going to close, but your family, now where are they, where's the whole family from?
Like my parents and things like that?
Yeah, parents and their grandparents or your grandparents
Virginia,
and their parents.
Primarily Virginia. Virginia. I have a lot of family in Virginia, very close to Tennessee, Appalachia.
Appalachia.
Yeah. I have Irish Appalachian descendants.
Did you seen the thing about the Clinch River?
No. What happened with the Clinch River?
That's on the border of close to Tennessee and North Carolina.
I know it.
There's a pyramid in the bottom of the Clinch River.
I did hear about this. That's right. They found something and they kept looking and digging and they realized it seems to be a pyramid that is it buried there? Is that what they think? That it's buried under there?
I don't know.
Yeah, I did hear something about this, but I don't know really anything about it, but I did hear about it. I believe that these places are everywhere. They've just been buried under thousands of years of time. People's memories aren't as great as we like to think they are. And it's like when we hear someone, who wrote something down 6,000 years ago, it's the world's longest and worst game of grapevine. Like the message that we get is not going to be understandable to us. So we have to see these things again with fresh eyes. And that's what I hope to do with this lecture tour. And I hope when people come to see both you and I speak, that they leave unable to see the world the same way again. That they say, there is so much more to find, so much more to discover, and so much more to learn than they ever thought was possible.
Well, I'm excited about it. I'm just a setup guy, and I thought this would be very educational, and hopefully, like RL said, we can teach some people some stuff. And RL, appreciate you coming on the show. And was there anything else you wanted to say? Where can we get your books and everything if we're looking for one of your books?
If you just simply go to Amazon, this book right here, Beneath the Haunted Sky, The Evidence for Alien Abduction. It has tons of photographic evidence, my own personal stories and experiences with abduction. Many of you have not heard on any channel or any podcast. You can get that information. I also wrote a book called The Lead Skull and Codex, Breakthroughs in Understanding the Coral Castle, also available on Amazon. And both of these books was number one in the physics of gravity. And Beneath the Haunted Sky was number one in astronomy and UFOs. I also have a channel called The Haunted Sky on YouTube that you're welcome to come and join us, where we talk about alien abductions, we talk about physics, and we talk about the reality of modern exopolitics in relation to the struggle for recognition by people like myself who have been subject to the alien abduction reality.
Well, this has been the highly intelligent RL Poole, and I am John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions. Thank you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.